Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio numbered 596. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
I'm just watching some professional football since I will not be watching my Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday now. And there's nothing else on right now. It's kind of a bummer. It was a lot of fun there for a little bit. It was like being a kid in a candy store with the sports. You had hockey going, basketball going, football going, baseball going. We lost hockey, and basketball is definitely winding down. So we're kind of getting back to somewhat the normal number of sports to be watched. So, yeah, there's that. But there's also a whole lot of professional wrestling. I did finish watching AEW today, so it is fresh in the memory banks. Although I did get to see what I would definitely call the clear low light of the show last night.
It might be the low light of AEW's entire existence, to be honest.
Yeah, like, I'm at a loss for why they're doing this. Like, now that it's, like, oh, and I guess we should make this perfectly clear. The Young Bucks, and it's... that there are so many layers to this one. The Young Bucks kicking Tony Schiavone while he's interviewing FTR is just one of those things where there was so much wrong with it. There were so many levels of wrong, because like the first level is, I can understand the first time when they super kick the ref, and then they're a little bit frustrated and they go back and kick him again. I'm like, okay, you guys are dicks, but whatever, I guess I kind of get it, and they lay down the fine to Tony Khan. I'm like, okay, you guys are trying to be tough guys, and it's kind of maybe kind of help rough up your image a little bit. But, you know, then there's that point where you go, we've taken it too far, and kicking a defenseless Tony Schiavone is definitely one of those things, you know? Like, there's no reason for it. Nick Jackson wasn't even on camera. So I'm like, was he even there?
I would assume he wasn't, and that was somebody else. It was the other foot, yeah.
So that kind of cracked me up, too. I'm like, did they have this little faith in the angle that he wasn't there? Is he not there for other reasons? There's the angle where... if they had left everything be separate, in and of the fact that if AEW didn't expressly on air mention that these guys were executive vice presidents of the company, and pretended kind of, you know, like Mr. McMahon exists in this weird ether spot where he can do the crazy shit but still own the company, you know? And yeah. I don't think the Young Bucks can pull that off. And that's... do you kind of get that vibe from what they're trying to do right now?
I mean, we've established that Tony Khan is the boss. He's the founder, the owner, the president. That, yes, they're high-ranking officials, but they have someone to answer to. There's no reason they wouldn't be fired for this. There's no reason they wouldn't be fired for this. It does nothing to set up them up for anything you'd want to watch. I mean, because FTR is right there, just, you know, befuddled by the whole thing, but they're solidly heels with Tully Blanchard.
Oh, right.
It makes no sense at all. None of anything that they're doing, and none of anything they're doing with the four remaining elite members makes any sense at all. But we'll get to the others later. Hey, why are we making 60-year-old Tony Schiavone pantomime taking a bump?
Well, that, and it was one of those things where I think I may have been looking at my phone, so I wasn't completely paying attention. And you kind of brought it up on Twitter about really disliking this angle, so I actually went back and rewatched it, and it really, they made it really awkward because Tony Schiavone made sure he was facing a proper direction to take the super kick, so like he was in this completely unnatural direction interviewing FTR the whole interview, just waiting for the kick to come in.
Yeah.
So that, I'm like, oh my god, like if you were really paying attention, you would have noticed that, you know, that something was up. The Bucks should be fired for just being this unprofessional about the whole thing. Schiavone ends up having to do a weird interview. And FTR was right just before that, saying, what have they done to deserve a title chance? And honestly, they're completely correct. Within the canon of All Elite Wrestling, the Young Bucks haven't done anything for an entire year.
No, they have not at all. It's been one of the more befuddling things about AEW. You know, we mentioned before about how it seemed like Kenny and the Young Bucks were being, you know, downplayed on purpose in order to prevent people, you know, calling this a vanity promotion to the detriment of the show and the promotion, really. But now they're front and center in this storyline that makes absolutely no sense. I mean,
yeah, they.
We'll guess we'll include the rest of them in a minute too.
They don't know how to book themselves. Like, it is so bizarre.
It is really bad.
Because I I'll say this too. Like, and we can go back to them specifically. Like, for the most part, I really enjoyed that show outside of their stuff. Like the Elite stuff is just still weird. Everything else, I think, worked pretty well. Yeah. But their stuff, like Hangman still drinking, and I think we've discussed this before, but it's just like
he's crossed the line from cool guy you want to drink with to a functioning alcoholic.
Yeah, and it's just like okay, and then they was Kenny Omega the only one getting a chance at a singles title?
They're gonna do an 8-man tournament with the finals taking place at the Full Gear pay per view on November 7th. I think they said. Kenny's one of the first three entrants. I imagine Hangman's gonna get himself in this tournament, and it wouldn't surprise me if they end up being in the finals against each other, as the excuse to get them to have a match with each other. Which, you know, that part's fine. But along the way, they're all just a bunch of assholes. And none of them have turned heel, officially.
And I guess it kind of ties in because I was thinking about, because Taz was really weird this week because, like, A, that was the other thing I didn't like about the Schiavone kicking is that, usually even the heel announcers like, yeah, that's despicable. And Taz spent the rest of the night going, yep, Schiavone deserved it, and kind of being deadpan serious about it. And it's just like, huh? No.
Now, I actually appreciated him just being comedic heel throughout the night. I didn't really get the sense that he was overplaying that. I honestly thought the announcing, and I don't know if that, what this bodes for Tony Schiavone's future is. I thought the announcing was the among the best it's been, because you had that third voice be, you know, comedic heel, and instead of, you know, essentially three straight men, with especially Schiavone and Excalibur doing basically the same job.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I mean, they've kind of had Taz sub in somewhat regularly, so I guess I don't think about it that much.
I mean, ideally for me, JR would be gone, and it would be Schiavone, Taz, and Excalibur, or someone else replacing Excalibur.
Schiavone and Taz would probably be just fine.
I agree. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I didn't really like that part of it. You know, I guess it's one thing to kind of do that for a referee. I think it's another thing when it's your fellow announcer, I guess. And I guess I didn't think that they had any heat between them, but maybe they have kind of been giving each other a hard time a little bit, or maybe just because Schiavone's Mr. Britt Baker.
Right.
That they've had a, like, I feel like maybe they've sniped a little bit, and maybe that's kind of a half-decent reason to have Taz in that position.
Yeah, but I've grown especially tired of the WWE trope of the supposed heel announcer too frequently having to say, well, he just went too far that time. Or the babyface announcer having to say, well, he capitalized on an opportunity. No, that's not supposed to be your jobs. You're supposed to root for the heels, and you're supposed to root for the babyfaces. Stop equivocating.
But that's normally wrestler on wrestler violence, which is, right, you know, always fair game, I think. But yeah, but Taz in that segment, and this is what made me think about it, Taz, I thought, was kind of like, he was making excuses for Adam Page walking off after the announcement that Kenny Omega would be in the tournament. But I was just sitting there going, hold on, didn't they, I thought I was doing the math in my head right, that it's just like there's 8 people and they only announced 3. I'm like, there's 5 more people to be announced. Like, why would you be pissed right off the bat? Why wouldn't you assume that you'd get a chance? Like, he's been in the title hunt. There's no reason he shouldn't be in a singles tournament.
He really hasn't wrestled much singles.
Well, no.
Hangman wrestled more singles.
I guess that's what I mean. Like, what? I don't know why Hangman would storm off after hearing this news of Omega being in there.
It's because in his mind, he still wants the tag team to continue. I think that's been the story. Hangman's not ready to let the tag team go.
Well, I guess I haven't. That hasn't come across to me at all. I mean, I guess that was the only thing that did strike me weird, because that was a tag team segment. I'm like, why is Paige out here? Like, I guess I didn't feel like he wanted the tag team to go on really either.
No, it is Kenny who absolutely ended it.
Okay. I missed that pay-per-view, and you did watch that one, so I'll give myself that excuse. I guess maybe then it's kind of a different angle that I'll take, which is he should be over it by now. Like, hasn't it been like a month since that pay-per-view that happened at?
it's going on a month. Yeah. But hey, we're trying to get over this depressed alcoholic character that we were supposed to rally behind.
Boy, you know, what can I say? You know, just not good, Jim. But other than that, like, I know that one segment that Jeremy alerted me to last evening was Britt Baker against Red Velvet, and I was pleased with that match too. Like, there wasn't anything too crazy about it in particular, but
I'm not sure exactly what's special enough about it for Jeremy to comment on it like that. But
I did think that Red Velvet sold well. I'm not sure what potential she may have or may not have, but I did think it was like one of those good. It was just long enough, like, it wasn't a complete squash match, but it was a squash match, you know? Like, I felt like it wasn't quite 3 minutes, but it was more like 5 minutes and helped kind of show off, I don't think that Britt Baker has wrestled to her potential, honestly, within AEW either. Like, she's been great as a character, but I always felt like she wrestled better on the indies than when I had seen her there as opposed to in AEW. But I really thought that she looked more crisp and more ready to go than she has within AEW itself, too. So I looked at it that way, kind of both of those things. Like, I thought Red Velvet did a great job selling the offense. And sometimes those squash matches are so quick, they can't really... the squashy can't really get that over.
Right. No, I thought that was pretty good. And Britt looked really good. I'm on the best I've seen of her. She really, you know... She showed off her offense. She was in complete control of that match. Yeah, no, it was good.
So, like I said, I guess it wasn't maybe it's just because it was the AEW women that he felt the need to point this out.
I guess so.
I guess where else to go? There is so much to go with. I mean, do you want to do segment by segment or just hit the...
No, just hit the high points.
Would you say that Billy Mitchell being in a segment with Miro is one of the highlights?
For some people, but I've never seen King of Kong, so I had no idea who that man was. Until it was pointed out.
That was a little bit... I knew who he... I have not actually seen King of Kong, but Ken and I did a show about Billy Mitchell's records being broken and how at least one of his records got taken off the books because...
Yeah, I was gonna say, wasn't one or all of them... disqualified?
Because he was using an emulator instead of the actual player, I believe, because there's this little glitch on one board that you can tell in the game tape if it's the emulator or if it's the regular player, and he got caught with it having been, you know, someone noticed it when they were watching the tape later. And he got a lot of his records wiped. But yeah, I did think that I'm like, not enough people are going to know who this guy is. Like, why isn't Miro saying who this is?
Like, why isn't there a graphic on the screen?
Why isn't there a graphic on the screen? Like, There were a number of ways to address this situation easily, but it was not addressed.
Right.
Well, I guess what is to be made about Isaiah Cassidy now that he gets a big big stage match against Chris Jericho?
It was fine, but you know, Jericho still won fairly handily. See, I'm not sure what there is for Chris Jericho to do right now. I mean, the stuff with him and MJF is good, and obviously that's the story that's gonna unravel as time goes on. But for right now, you know, Jericho's just wrestling whoever from week to week. You know, all right. I was on the show last week, so I really didn't get to comment on this, but you know,
oh.
Probably it'll also be a good transition to maybe the next thing we may talk about. I hated Orange Cassidy losing to Brody Lee last week.
Yes. Jeremy
there
and I.
No need to, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Jeremy and I agreed with you. And then, you know, he also, you know, mentioned that it does. You kind of want Orange Cassidy to be a little bit of a special attraction.
Right.
And those words really hit me more this week than they did last week. Because now I'm like, oh, man. Now they have him wrestle this week to get a win back so that he still looks strong. And I'm like, whew, okay, now you're starting to really wear on that, you know, special appearance of Orange Cassidy in the ring.
Yeah, there was no reason that coming off of beating Chris Jericho twice that he should have been put in that spot. And I'm of the theory that Cody absolutely booked that way on purpose. That his dramatic return would come after Orange Cassidy, who has gotten hugely over as a babyface in the last few months, really throughout the entire year, but especially the last, you know, couple of months he was working with Jericho. I think Cody did that on purpose to cut Orange Cassidy off at the knees. He moved out of his father's playbook.
Oh, man, are we going to have to call him the new Triple H?
Yeah, I mean,
Bigfoot in his way.
Reason for Orange Cassidy to take that pinfall. Why couldn't Cody have run on the match to cause a DQ then? If that's what we're gonna do, or Orange shouldn't have even been in that match. Now, how this relates to what I was mentioning about talking about Chris Jericho's match with Isaiah Cassidy is, if you know the last guy who beat Chris Jericho just moved up, just went and got beaten at the next opportunity, what does it mean to be Chris Jericho? It's now kind of this albatross around Chris Jericho when he tries to wrestle and put over these new guys.
Oh,
to me,
right.
If I'm Jericho, I'm pissed about that.
Yeah, you would think that he would have a decently sized voice within AEW, but it certainly does not seem to be the case at all.
Yeah, no, so I'm not really, so I'm just kind of like, well, so I didn't think it was Isaiah Cassidy was going to win because it's just too soon after the last Chris Jericho loss to Orange Cassidy for Jericho to lose again, but I'm just like, even if he beats him, so what? They'll just have him lose to the next guy anyway.
Or they'll just put him back in a tag team.
Right.
Which, I mean, I guess it's an okay way to have, you know, a singles guy like Chris Jericho have a match during an off week to kind of extend another feud, but I don't know what good it really does anyone. because Jericho should be beating him.
Yeah, he should. He absolutely should.
And, you know, it's just like, I guess Cassidy got in enough offense not to look bad, but you know, it also wasn't one of those. You know, I always feel like people always try to catch that John Cena versus Kurt Angle magic in a bottle. And I mean, I know that Cassidy has kind of been around AEW for the full year, but I can't really recall a singles match per se. Maybe he's had one, but it you know, I guess it is still at least a little bit of a big deal for him in the scope of things to get to wrestle Jericho, but the booking definitely has not supported anyone so far wrestling Mr. Jericho.
Yeah, and speaking of booking wrestling Chris Jericho, oh my god, Luther and his little buddy Serpentico or whatever the hell his name is. Jeez, I know it's Jericho's 30th anniversary and I'm sure he got to handpick his buddy for the spot, but ugh, that is not, that does not sound promising.
No, like, Luther's been on the roster. I guess I wasn't sure why exactly. Like, people kept on mentioning, like, I don't know, was he famous in Japan for a while?
Not really. Not really famous. He's not. I don't think even in the Japanese deathmatch scene of the 90s, he's in. He would even be considered in the upper echelon of that. He's just Jericho's buddy.
Okay, dokie.
Doing a job too, and well, him and his masked friend, I guess they're undefeated as a tag team on Dark.
Oh, good, great.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Riveting.
Yeah. So I guess that is something like that is kind of the problem with Jericho, really. Just altogether, like, he's another one of those guys that's just. And I feel like we talk about it a lot with the WWE, but, like, what do you do with him when he's not in for one of the titles? Like, you don't really want him going against Brody Lee. And he shouldn't really be going back after Jon Moxley. And they just don't have any big names for him to go with. And, I mean, and I guess it is kind of weird that Jericho wrestles a singles match like the week after he starts a tag team with Jake Hager.
Right, but also the AEW tag team champions are heels, so that really doesn't work either.
Well, this is also true.
So yeah, no, Jericho doesn't really have much direction. The Orange Cassidy thing ended up working out for what it was over the summer, but now yeah, there's really not much else. I mean, they're setting up, you know, MJF possibly joining the Inner Circle. I think that bit's entertaining. Who knows where they will go? So that's something for Jericho. But otherwise, yeah, no, Jericho's kind of rudderless right now.
Yeah, because, and I think we've talked about it, like, they just have, that's Jericho's big pool in AEW is just, you know, his name recognition for a young brand. But, you know, they didn't get a chance to really bring in enough names to go up against him, especially when the aforementioned someone like Kenny Omega has been largely a tag team competitor the whole time, and same with Adam Page, who would have been two of the top guys really to help chew up some feud time with Chris Jericho, have been stuck off in La La Land.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess it says something about the singles baby faces there, because Lord knows Jon Moxley just he's just got a rogues gallery of opponents to deal with. So and that's one of the better parts of the show. Really, maybe the best part of the show is the fact that Moxley gets to kind of do his own thing. You know, he's the true biggest star in the company and just gets to, you know, defend his title week after week and do well that way.
Yeah, I mean, because I definitely do not think that Butcher probably had his best showing of his, you know, it was definitely one of those, oh, man, do they think we actually think that he actually has a chance in this match? But, you know, he definitely proved that he's more than whatever terrible gimmick they've decided to go with this time around.
That was fine. And once again, all this whole thing with Moxley and Eddie Kingston's crew is, you know, it's filling time while Archer's out. I mean, so they're kind of having to do a lot of this on the fly, and it's been good for what it is.
Yeah. And I think, boy, I think we buzzed through that show.
Well, I guess we could. We mentioned his name, but we really didn't. We didn't cover the segment with Cody and Brody Lee.
Well, oh, that is a good point. I don't know. I was not a fan of the presentation of Cody's accepting of the match.
No, Cody got too cute. He always tries to sprinkle in some insider references in his promos, and at times it works better. It worked better than it did here, but this was this was a little weak. The swerve that he wasn't going to accept it, and then he did. It didn't really register very well. The brawl was okay, but a little overdone, and then I don't know why Nyla Rose had to attack that lady who I may or may not have ever seen before, and I certainly don't remember her name. I don't know why that had to be added when the segment was supposed to be focused on Cody and Brody Lee and Brandy and Anna Jay.
Yeah, that was what, like, I kind of enjoyed the chaos of that segment.
I did too.
Just because, like, I'm like, oh, you know what? More fights probably would break out, like, you know, little smaller fights would probably break out more than they normally do in that situation. So I did enjoy that aspect, but I do agree with you, too, that it's a little bit of a double-edged sword there. Because you're right, especially with how much they focused on Nyla Rose beating down a woman that we may have seen a handful of times. You know, it does take focus off of, like you said, the main point of this segment, which is Brody Lee and Cody, since they're going to be in a dog collar match this coming week.
Right, yeah. No, but that should be really good. Interesting that they're not saving that for the pay-per-view, so we'll see what kind of finish they do to either get another match out of this feud or transition them out. I imagine that there will be a finish dictating another match between the two, though.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. After the. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of shenanigans that can be pulled with the Dark Order to push this another match, but I mean, this is the other kind of weird aspect to me of Cody coming right back for this championship, is that typically you want wrestlers to have longer runs with the championship. So it does put Cody in a spot to lose, which again kind of tumbles back a little bit to the Orange Cassidy situation. You know, like, why did he lose to Brody Lee already? Because if Cody's gonna lose to Brody Lee again, like, Orange Cassidy still seems to be the next guy in line, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Because they just don't have enough build up and definitely Orange Cassidy has been built up specifically. Yeah, so, yeah, that was a little bit of a mixed bag, but I'm okay with it. We'll, you know, it should be kind of interesting. I know they kind of played up the extra viciousness and, like, the rarity of the dog collar match, but I guess I don't really think of it that much differently than a strap match. I know that you're connected at a different location, but the action of the match is fairly similar.
Yeah, absolutely. They haven't said whether they're going to do four corner touch or pinfall or submission. But so I can't really speak on whether or not they're going to completely do the usual of that kind of a match. But we shall see.
So I guess since NXT has a pay-per-view this Sunday, Chris. This Sunday.
I'll still probably forget now.
that just kind of cracked me up. The amount of times, and I mean, it was somewhat warranted just because TakeOver traditionally has been on a Saturday. I do kind of understand the stressing of them mentioning Sunday constantly, but I also thought that it was a little overdone. yeah, NXT has a takeover this Sunday, and I really enjoyed this show. If it had not been for Shotzi Blackheart trying to kill herself. My woman cannot be injuring herself. I'm just going to throw that out there.
No. That was bad. Yeah. I mean, it was a good enough match, but stop doing crap like that on the apron while you're during the middle of a match when it's not going to be a finish, and or just don't do it at all. It's that protect your necks, people. There's already enough people out between injuries and COVID-related reasons. You can cool it on the sliced breads on the apron.
Yeah. You know, Shotzi got a nice little bounce back win of her own, I guess, since we kind of were talking about that a little bit ago. For Mr. Cassidy, but that was a little bit of a scary moment. And I'm trying to think. I really enjoyed the because they were doing a lot of setup segments for the pay per view, and the first one that was up. That and I really enjoyed the setup was Santos Escobar and Isaiah Scott, and I really loved the backdrops for both gentlemen and how different they were, but they both had a really nice style and sophistication to them that fit their personalities, and I thought that was great, like how they set that up. Did you have any thoughts on that?
No, you're exactly right. No, they're doing what they can with this match, and they've been building it for a while with various, you know, six-man tag matches throughout the last month or two on NXT. So it's built. It's still just a struggle for me to care about anything labeled cruiserweight. It just feels like so being removed from everything else going on that I just still don't. I don't understand why they're continuing with the cruiserweight division.
Yeah, they have definitely gotten better exposure in NXT, at least for my eyeballs. But. I'm with you. Like, they haven't really done enough to still really get me invested in the division as a whole.
Not particularly. I mean, Escobar is good, Swerve is good, but it's just still not a lot of meat on the bone for me.
Yeah, and NXT, even with the expanded format, they don't really have enough time to be concentrating on kind of cultivating the 205 roster. You know, they got enough personnel, you know. I mean, I guess that was kind of one of those things. We were concerned about them taking up 2 hours, I think, initially. And they haven't really worn through anyone at all.
No, not particularly, no.
Yeah, so I did really like that segment. And we got Damian Priest and Johnny Gargano package that was kind of a nice little recap. But the one that I really liked was the one directly after that, which was the Kyle O'Reilly video package. And it was definitely something to me that was needed. To they gave Kyle O'Reilly way more character than they've given him his past 3 years in Undisputed Era.
Yeah, the video package was absolutely tremendous. You know, well done package to give you know who Kyle O'Reilly is, what it, you know. What he's here for, and you know how much this means to him, and the comments from Adam Cole were a good touch because we are definitely hammering it home hard that everything is great within the Undisputed Era, and Adam Cole couldn't be happier for his best friend.
Oh boy!
So this is either going. Well, there's two ways to look at it. Adam Cole was laying it on so thick that he's turning at, on Kyle O'Reilly. Or, conspicuous by their absences entirely, Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong are going to cost Kyle O'Reilly this match, leaving it to Fish and Strong versus Cole and O'Reilly.
Yeah, there was a definitely Adam Cole, with that thickness, definitely kind of laid out either of those paths to come true. I would be surprised if they figure out some third way, but, those do seem to be the two, obvious choices. And I do feel like the interwebs has alerted me to the fact that Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole are to be baby faces. So I would, as a sometimes betting man, I guess I would have to go with the Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong cost Kyle O'Reilly his chance upcoming here, and then we get two baby faces and two heels thus way.
That would make the most sense. So yeah, but I look forward to seeing how it all plays out. And O'Reilly versus Balor should be an excellent match.
Yes, it should be. I've really liked Kyle O'Reilly's work for a long time. He certainly hasn't had much of a chance in the singles division in NXT. And we've kind of talked about, you know, NXT kind of needing a freshen up in the main event area. And while I don't think that Kyle O'Reilly is going to beat Finn Balor, he definitely has the talent, I think, to stick around the main event level within NXT to help mix him in there with some of those other people that are floating around out there. So,
I completely agree. And since he's been so entwined in the tag team division, there's a lot of matches, singles matches O'Reilly hasn't had. So he'd be good. He'd be good to have as a single going forward.
Yeah. So that was a cool one. Oh my God! And Jeremy and I talked about this, and maybe he. You'll have Jeremy thought he had read that Tegan Knox blew out an ACL again, and the WWE seemed to would you say they confirmed that, or are they trying to pull a work here on this
it
one?
It seemed like they're confirming it that the news of Tegan Knox tearing her ACL again. the story really only came from one source. Our old message board pal, Rovert. But he does seem to have some sources within NXT, and he's gotten things right in that regard in the past. Who would fucking talk to that asshole? I have no idea, but apparently they do.
Ah, man. Yeah, I just... It's one of those, I couldn't feel worse for someone.
I could not at all. It does appear to be true. Though, if she were to show up at some point in a near distant future and go after... Candice LeRae, I would be very, very happy to see it, but it does not. It does not sound good.
Yeah, and if she decides to come back again, God bless, and I hope she has the mental fortitude to get herself through this a third time.
That, and it may have also been from Rovert again, but actually. The first time Tegan Knox hurt her knee, or knee area, was when she was 13 years old in like middle school athletics. It's a recurring issue for her.
Oh man.
To that degree.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know. I think you're kind of in, that was another thing that Jeremy and I talked about a little bit. Like, are you at the point where you're just like, yeah, maybe this just really isn't the thing, unfortunately.
I don't know. I don't know what else she has, or, you know, she's in the U.S. I mean, not as a citizen, but you know, on a work visa during a pandemic. So yeah, it's a whole messy situation for her.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, and I don't know if she's young, you know, I mean, obviously she's young enough, but I don't know if she'd want to do something backstage and just, you know, I guess for lack of a better example, I will say pull a Corey Graves, you know, and become a commentator because of your injury issues.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that she's going to become an announcer necessarily, or that should be her path. But, you know, yeah, like I said, like that's obviously up to her, though. But you know, if she really did hurt herself that early on, you know. And she's done this three times now. That's not a good look, man. And it does not seem like that would portend good news in the future.
No, not at all.
So, yeah, that definitely helps the Gargano's slime factor that his...
Johnny's line about she broke my TV, so you tore her ACL. that was perfect.
Yeah, I think they I feel like the Gargano's got off to a little bit of a slow start, but they are really rounding into form with things like that and super kicking Damian Priest while he was celebrating. And I'm trying to think what they did within the match, and it's kind of slipping my mind in the mixed tag match to come out with the win.
Right. What was it?
Yeah.
Low blow, and then Gargano hit his finish.
Yeah.
Priest.
Yep. So, yeah, the shenanigans are continuing apace. I do think that, unfortunately for the Garganos, I don't think we're going to have a husband and wife champions. What are your thoughts?
I don't think that we're going to see that at all. No. It's too soon for Priest to lose, and I don't see Io Shirai losing before she has the big singles match with Rhea Ripley. They've been teasing that for a while. They tease it, and then they go away from it for a few weeks. Then they tease it again. So, yeah, Ripley versus Shirai is something that's definitely going to happen before. Well, one or both of them. Well, whichever one doesn't end up with an NXT championship by the end ends up on Raw or SmackDown, I guess.
Yeah, I would, I would have to think so. Just because, Ripley could have been up there already, honestly. I don't know why they didn't, put her up there after the loss to Charlotte, but, you know, whatever. It is what it is at this point. And she at least has that Raquel Gonzalez match in her near future. But I don't, that isn't, they're not, are they actually in a match at the pay-per-view?
No, they have not. They have not announced that, at least.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think that they did. But I wasn't completely sure. Yeah. I agree with your reasoning as far as both of the Garganos losing for various reasons. I guess heading back to my topic of I really like the hype. What were your thoughts on the Finn Balor Kyle O'Reilly contract signing that was moderated by one Shawn Michaels?
I thought it was really good. I thought, you know, once again, Kyle showed a lot of his personality in it. You know, was drifting between being serious and being humorous, and then Finn Balor kept a steady, constant tone. He's the champion. He's the favorite. He's the veteran. He's the prince. He's not sweating anything. I think they both played it very well.
I enjoyed that quite a bit too. And I think that was the last real kind of, segment, in that style of hype, kind of like it was kind of nice to bring a little bit something different to the table. You know, it definitely wasn't your traditional contract signing situation where you know things are going to devolve into a problem. But they also did do a good job of, like, establishing at least a little bit of animosity between the two of them, even though... and they even kind of pointed out at the top of the segment that they don't have any major beef with each other, like, but they did again do a really good job of establishing that both reasons why both of them want to win.
Right. Yeah, no, it was very good.
I don't know. I guess we I don't think there's anything else NXT-wise to talk. Even though their takeover is this Sunday.
No, I think we hit it pretty good.
Well, I guess, do you want to... there's at least one WWE topic that I feel like needs to be talked about a little bit, and it's more Clash of Champions than it is Raw. But what do you think of the Tribal Chief Roman Reigns?
I think it's the hottest thing they've got right now, and it'd be interesting to see where they go with it from here, because after Jey Uso, they're kind of out of family members to really keep this thing going.
Well, I just kind of figure that he's going to kind of use that instead of worrying about this being his yard, that he's going to tribal chief everyone. Like, I don't think he's going to be looking for a cabal like his former S.H.I.E.L.D. brethren Seth Rollins over on Raw. But I could definitely see it being something of a gimmick for him moving forward, even if there aren't direct Samoan lines to continue to take on moving forward.
Yeah. Obviously, they kind of have to move into a different direction. I'm not looking forward to a baby-faced Bray Wyatt being the next challenger, although they've kept that in play, especially with the way Alexa Bliss was eyeballing Roman and Paul on SmackDown. I imagine maybe that's the goes next, but they really got that deal over with Roman and Jay and the family. Issue.
Yeah.
Kind of surprisingly, how big they got that, and it's kind of a shame if they move away from that.
Yeah, I would have to imagine that there's going to be some type of at least aftermath to that. Like that can't just completely.
Well, they did announce that there's going to be a special ceremony on SmackDown where Roman will be crowned the tribal chief. The thing with this is, like, your wrestling brain should tells me, I don't know about you, that the end game for this really needs to be Roman Reigns versus The Rock in the main event of WrestleMania. That's the way to go. But your logical brain, in other sense, tells you, I don't think Rock's going to show up for WrestleMania this year. Between COVID and his schedule, I don't think it's happening either. But it seems like we'd be perfect at the same time.
And no, I was going to say, like, this should be an ideal year for The Rock. Like, I do know that his schedule is crazy, but I don't know how much... I don't think they're doing that much filming still. I mean, I know that they've started filming stuff again, but I would think that he would be able to wiggle through. And I saw a rumor floating around that there's a chance that Rock comes back for this year, or that Rock is open to a match at WrestleMania again, is maybe the way it was worded. And I didn't really look into it.
I mean, he did announce this week that production is starting on his Young Rock TV series on NBC, which is going to focus on him as a kid and his dad as a wrestler. So there's going to be a wrestling theme to the new show he's producing. So and it's on NBC, which is, you know, a WWE partner. So
oh right,
there could certainly be a tie-in and a reason in that way for him to do it. So yeah. Maybe his schedule won't be as tight, and he won't be as concerned about, you know, COVID issues. Now, granted, for when it comes to WrestleMania, we have as of right now, we have no idea where WrestleMania is going to be or how many, if any, people are going to be allowed in the stadium.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the one thing that The WWE seems fine with the virtual fans at the current moment. Like, they definitely continue to talk up the Thunderdome. So I don't feel like they're feeling any pressure from the likes of AEW, who have let in, a limited amount of fans, which...
And that is just so negligible. Like, you can't hear them. They're so far away. It kind of doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, the way that you have to set up a wrestling production in that space, it's not really good for that space. You know, like, yeah, it's just not good for that space.
No, it's not. It's a concert amphitheater. Everything's at a weird angle.
Yeah. Because that would be kind of like if... Well, and it wouldn't even quite be the same if NXT were outside at the same venue that I go to here in Columbus, because that definitely looks larger than the venue I'm thinking of here. But yeah, the fans are too far away, and it you kind of hear something, but you don't really hear something.
Right. So yeah, no, I think the Thunderdome is the actual ideal solution to this problem. So I could see them staying with it for the foreseeable future, at least until the Orlando Magic come calling for the arena back. But who knows when the hell that's going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be a little while. I know that much. It's going to be a while. Because I know that both them and hockey are going to come back roundabouts the same time, and people are looking at December / January at the earliest.
Okay, and they've said that they're going to keep the same bubble?
No, everyone, at least hockey-wise, I don't know what they've talked about basketball-wise, but no, they're not going to do bubbles, but they might be doing... a more limited travel schedule, which is something that Major League Soccer has instituted, where they've that. But of course, with hockey, they've still got to figure out the border situation, because MLS just had two of their teams, their Canadian teams, move south to the U.S. so that they could play, and they have temporary homes for the meantime. And I don't see that happening for hockey, but I don't know what they're going to do exactly for basketball, or if they're kind of planning on, something. I would imagine it would be along the same lines of, limited travel schedule, and limited fans depending upon state. Cause I know that at least Pennsylvania and Ohio, I don't think are still allowing, fans yet.
Right.
I know some other places, obviously, like Florida, are. And why did we completely tangent on the Thunderdome?
We were just talking about...
Oh, and live fans. And the Tribal Chief is what got us started.
The Tribal Chief, yes.
And I agree with you. Like, it seems... You would want that to be in front of a crowd, but I can also see a lot of people buying a pay-per-view for that, and to have that be some type of crazy cinematic match, and them to almost have obviously a Hobbs and Shaw type feel to it. I could see that working without a crowd or with a crowd. Like, and I don't know, like, if they recorded it without a crowd, it would honestly, like, you were talking about scheduling, it would make it easier for The Rock to schedule if they just recorded it ahead of time and they just, popped it on right at the main event of WrestleMania. And we get, a pre-taped match for WrestleMania main event.
I think I'd, pr- still prefer them in a more traditional match myself.
But yeah,
you make a point, though.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great if they were in a, a traditional match would be ideal, but, I could definitely see a cinematic match going on with, Buck, what the fuck is his company? Why am I, Buck 50?
$7?
$7. Good God. Okay, whatever. Oh boy. So yeah, that I guess I had to at least get a little bit of the tribal chief talk out of my system before we wrap this whole thing up, because I'm kind of scrolling through Raw here, and I guess the other big thing maybe to talk about is the continued weirdness with the Rey Mysterio and his family.
Yeah.
Is it just me, or should I... Am I getting too old thinking, oh, Buddy Murphy is way too old for a 19-year-old?
No, not at all. It's definitely... I mean, they do say it should be... Well, let's see. Half your age plus... Was it half your age plus 8 or something, isn't it? But...
Oh.
She's very young. I don't know why it has to be anything romantic... Can't they just be friends? Especially with everything else going on in the company and in wrestling with young ladies and certain accusations. I wouldn't go in this direction.
Oh. Say.
Once again, she is an adult, but it's the age difference is considerable, and she, you know, they are having her come off as somewhat naive. Like, I like that they're trying to have do some long-term storytelling and some soap opera stories, but I don't know. It's a little weird. You know, Rey having his family with him every week is just getting weird.
That I guess is the
Why
thing.
Why doesn't he just send his wife and daughter home?
It's a great question. Like,
why doesn't everybody else get to bring their family to work with them on TV as well?
Another very valid question. You would think that someone else would want to bring their family to work every day of the week.
It's kind of an odd deal. Kind of interesting. I kind of want to see where it goes, but
yeah,
I don't know exactly where it can go. I mean, she's 19 years old. She's not a wrestler. She's not an actress. She's doing okay with what they're giving her, but I mean, if the end game for this is her turning against her family to end up with Seth and Buddy, then that's, you know, what else do you do with it? At that point, Seth Rollins has just completely destroyed the Mysterio family, and he's won the feud, and made Rey look like a buffoon, and Dominic.
And then what do you do with her?
Yeah, what's again?
Like she's got nothing after the turn. She's got nothing.
Yeah, I mean, if she wants to be a wrestler, great. But I've not heard anything about her actively training like her brother did for years. So it'd take years for her to be useful, really.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely a weird look. Like, and I'm kind of with you. Like, I'm half intrigued because it is kind of some interesting. Like, I mean, it is a story that like. Cause what was Tom Phillips saying? It's been 5 months that Seth Rollins has been torturing the Mysterio family. I'm like, God damn, man, this thing has been running a long ass time. And
it really has. And I can appreciate long term storytelling because people complain about
this is short term
storytelling, and then they complain about that too. So it's like, let's see where this goes. The age difference between Buddy and Aaliyah is a little uncomfortable, but maybe if they don't ever actually do anything in that regard, it can be fine.
Agreed.
This is all part of Seth's mind game. But at a certain point, the baby faces are supposed to win feuds for the most part.
Yeah.
And the way this is being set up, I don't know how Ray and Dominic can truly get their revenge here. They still seem very, after the loss to Drew McIntyre at Money in the Bank, they still seem very protective of Seth as a top guy. He really hasn't lost. Buddy Murphy takes the pinfalls. He doesn't.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like you said, and it's just become such a chronic problem in the WWE where they get these personal feuds and then they don't let the person that was offended within the setup get the victory. And it just really has neutered every one of those people because it was The Miz first, and then Kevin Owens did not get revenge on Shane McMahon at all.
He did. No.
Oh, Kevin Owens, was that one of the few ones
that Shane in the last match and sent him back and sent him away?
That's right. I'm trying to think because there have been a couple other examples though, and maybe I'm just not remembering them. That is kind of the odd thing about this feud. Like it needs to swing Ray's way, but the way things have gone, like I do kind of expect Seth to still come out on top, which makes Ray look like a complete weenie.
Yeah, he does. It absolutely would. So maybe we'll get the swerve of the swerve where she doesn't get tricked into ending up with Seth and Buddy.
I don't know. Is there anything else from Raw that stood out to you that you want to talk about before we mosey on out of here, before I talk about beer?
Go ahead and talk about your beer.
My younger brother, thankfully, he told me if I ever want beer from one of my favorite breweries in Pittsburgh, their production facility happens to be close to his house. So I just have to send him some cash. And it just so happened that he needed to come into Ohio recently for some not-so-good reasons. It did bring me the beverages that I had requested. And this is from Gristhouse Brewing. If and when this pandemic thing blows over, I highly suggest to anyone within listening distance to go to Gristhouse. Their beer is fantastic, just in general. And this Kapow candy that I requested from him is a fruited sour with boysenberry, raspberry, and guava. 7% ABV. This thing's fantastic. It's really good. It just has a nice fruity flavor to it. The 7% does give it a little kapow, since sour beers tend to be a little bit lower in the ABV department. 7% is definitely on the high side for a sour. It actually doesn't taste too sweet either, which is nice. Like, they have a nice sweet and tart balance, to this one. And I don't know if that's why the guava was in there, just because it is not as, tart as the boysenberry or the raspberry there. So, yeah, Gristhouse beer in general, Kapow candy, definite approval for this show from at DeFrango11. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, wherever you may happen to listen to us, and have a good night.
Later.